Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. And by the Rockstar Chronicles Series 1, my new book, featuring over 45 intimate conversations with the greatest music legends the world will ever know, available now at BookBaby.com and Amazon.com. Legendary proto-punk guitar heroes James Williamson and Dennis Tech have joined forces for a brand new odds-defying studio album, 2-1, set to be released September 18th by your old pals at Cleopatra Records. An inductee into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Williamson was the guitarist and co-songwriter for one of the most iconic and influential albums of all time, Iggy and the Stooges' Raw Power. While Tech launched and occupied the same role for what became Australia's ground zero for the punk movement with his band and revered Radio Birdman, the album features 11 all-new original compositions, highlighted by the first single, Stable, and explosion lead-off track, Jet Pack Nightmare, which is one of my favorites. Williamson had this to say about the project. It was really a lot of fun working with Dennis to make a no-frills, good old-fashioned guitar album. Took me back to Raw Power and Kill City days. Dennis comes from a very similar approach to music that I do. Both of us have many years of experience in Detroit and Ann Arbor, Michigan. Tech adds, Raw Power shaped my path as a young guitar player. It was great to partner up with James to make this album. Everything fell into place beyond expectations, the songs, the band, the production, and even the timing. I am very happy with it. 2-1 will be available on CD, digital, and in your choice of red, blue, yellow, or classic black vinyl. Coming soon on Cleopatra Records, release date September 18th. Please welcome American guitarist, songwriter, record producer, electronics engineer, and member of the iconic proto-punk rock band, The Stooges, James Williamson, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, James.
Hey, Ray. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, man. You know, Iggy has been around so long and has the staying power. You know, it must be great to, you know, be associated with that band.
Oh yeah, well it was more than a band for me. It was kind of like a family, really. We went back with each other a really long ways, and so it was a really important part of my life.
And now you're hooked up with Radio Birdman legend, which I probably kind of saw it coming because didn't they get their name from a Stooges song, from a 70s Stooges song?
Yeah, they actually misheard the lyric.
Really?
Radio Birdman. So, yeah, I mean, Dennis had many connections with Stooges because for a period of time he lived in Ann Arbor.
Right.
And he knew Ronnie and Scotty and, you know, the family actually. And although he's a little bit younger than all of us, not that much, but a little bit, then he moved over to Australia. His father took a sabbatical with a University of Michigan professor and took a sabbatical over in Australia, and that's how Dennis got over there in the first place. So, yeah, he had a lot of places where he crossed paths with Stooges people, but oddly enough, I didn't ever really know Dennis back in the day. Only when we went and played a tribute show for Ron Ashton, kind of a memorial show. Dennis was asked to play a couple of the old songs because he knew them all, and that's the first time I met him, probably in about 2011.
We all know the best garage rock bands in the world come from Michigan. I mean, the list goes on. You know, MC5, you know, Grand Funk Railroad. You know, I know Susie Quattro. Remember her band with her sister and all those guys started back in the day. You know, I just wish music was like that today, just finding bands and garages and, you know, promoting them and putting them on the radio. Those were good old days, man.
They were, yeah. The late 60s and early 70s in Michigan was just, you know, wall-to-wall music. And the good part about that was that the bands were all good. And the reason why they were all good was you couldn't last very long if you weren't good, because there were so many good bands, and the people just wouldn't tolerate it if you weren't, you know, up to that level.
Yeah, I always debated, should the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame have been in Michigan instead of Cleveland? I guess their answer for that is Freed, you know, because I guess he came from there. But, you know, of course, Michigan's got Motown and all the, you know, Alice Cooper and all you guys. I mean, that could have been a long debate if somebody had brought it up.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that no matter where the Hall of Fame ended up, the good music was still coming from Detroit.
Exactly. So. That's the truth, man. That really is the truth. But let me take you. One thing I wanted to say about Dennis, I did some research on him. Is he actually, he's a trained ER doctor and ex-Navy flight surgeon? Is that true?
I think he did ER in the Navy. I don't know about flight surgeon.
Right.
I know he actually, yes, he was in the Navy for a while, and he was got to fly some jets occasionally. Not that wasn't his main thing, but he was actually a Marine.
Wow.
But that's part of the Navy, and when you get to be you know, working with the guys, the pilots and stuff as much as he did, then you have to know how the plane flies, so they'd get him to fly and stuff. So yeah, he is definitely a man of many talents.
You know, rock stars are very intelligent. I mean, you know, besides the music, they're artists. I mean, look at, you know, Brian May. He's an astrophysicist. Look at you. You know, you designed computer chips, man. How did that go?
It went wonderfully. I mean, I never regretted my career in technology. I got involved in it when the personal computer was just beginning.
Right.
And so I kind of got to ride the whole wave of, you know, the PC, the internet, you know, and I am still in Silicon Valley. And so I, you know, got a front row seat for all this stuff happening and exposure to all these people. And I just had a blast. It was a great ride.
Well, me and you had something in common. I was in retail electronics. We had a family business since the early 60s, and I was the last one to close back in the late 90s. I had a business in the J.W. Marriott Hotel in D.C. I was born and raised in D.C. in that area, and we did a lot of business with Sony. Bought tons of electronics. You know, when the Sony Soundabout, the Walkman first came out, we had it. The first disc player came out, we had it. First video camera, we had it. tons of electronics we bought from Sony, and you worked for Sony, right?
Yeah, I did. I started out at Advanced Micro Devices, which is a chip company.
Right.
But I ended up, about the last 15 years of my career, I was at Sony. And, you know, Sony is an amazing company.
Yes, they are.
I ended up in corporate, and so I was working with all the different business units. Mm-hmm. You know, there's pictures, there's music, there's electronics, and it just covers so much territory, and it's such a, you know, it's such a westernized country. I mean, the people working at Sony are, you know, like first class guys. So I really enjoyed working for that company.
Yeah, Sony, no baloney, right?
Yeah, that's right.
All the good stuff came from Sony, and of course they were all made in Japan back then. Then they, you know, what they lost the quality when they started making things back in Korea, you know. And but the original stuff, I mean, when the Walkman first came out, the Soundabout, which we sold for $250 when it first came out, I was blown away. There was nothing like that.
Yeah, well, the world today has been a challenge for everybody because of really China. The people that used to make that stuff, like you say, in Sony in Japan,
right.
It was very high quality stuff.
Very high quality.
And it's not to say that it isn't anymore, but just the economics of production changed underneath them and everybody else. And so you know, the things have started to become commoditized, and it was a very difficult business for everybody.
When Gorbachev came, he came to D.C., and they had the national press for Russia, and everybody else was set up right below us. My store had the national press building was above us, so we knew all the press and everything. And when Gorbachev came, all his guys from Russia, I was on Coast to Coast ABC radio because of that, but all the Russians were looking for Sony. And back then, they were making that transition, a lot of the transition to made in Korea. They didn't want anything, any part of that. If it wasn't made in Japan, they wouldn't buy anything.
Well, they're smart guys.
Yeah, exactly. They used to try to trade caviar, you know, for electronics. And we did, you know, we did bargain a little bit and barter. It was kind of fun back then. The new
well, that must have been interesting to get to see Gorbachev.
Yeah, I saw his motorcade. You wouldn't believe the size of his motorcade. Oh my gosh, it was crazy. You know, we took a lot of things for granted living in D.C., but you know, we saw, you know, I saw it back then. It was, you know, Ronald Reagan was the president. I think the next president should be a rock star. What do you think?
Well, you know, they couldn't do any more. I better not say that.
Yeah, we don't want to go there. I'm tired of politics, to be honest with you. You know, I want to bring the music back. Yeah. I want concerts back and live music, man. It's been rough.
Yeah. Well, that's actually been one of the upsides of this record getting out. I ended up mixing it in February, and I was just about ready to get it mastered. And, you know, the shutdown came.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't get it mastered. And so I wasn't sure when I could get this record out. And luckily, Cleopatra had some contacts with guys that had, you know, operations out of their home that were good. And so I was able to get the record mastered. And then, also, fortunately, there was a lot of backlog of records right at that point because most bands were holding their records back,
exactly,
in hopes that they could tour them, you know. And of course, none of that was happening. And so, anyway, I got to go to the front of the line, and now we got this thing coming out in September.
Well, it's a great album, you know. I think I'll give it 5 stars. It you know, I loved it. You know, it reminded me a lot. It's high energy. It's got fun lyrics. Reminds me of the 70s, you know, with the underground rock, new wave, and punk. you know, guys like Ian Dury and the Blockheads, Lou Reed, of course, the Stranglers. And you guys have that kind of fine line between punk and rock, you know? And kind of like an MC5 sound in a way. You know, the Stooges, of course. What do you think?
I don't think even refer to myself as punk.
Right.
I mean, I think we influenced a lot of punks, but I'm more of a rock guy.
Right.
And so, I'm flattered to hear that, and I think this album, you know, I produced it, and one of my goals was not to overproduce it, you know, just to make it, you know, straightforward, guitar based, you know, just sound good. And I think that's what it is.
Well, you're an excellent guitar player. You know, Dennis is the vocalist, fantastic. You guys are a good mesh. You know, you collaborate well together. Some of my favorite songs on the album, you know, Melissa Blue was a really cool song. It sounded a lot very, very Lou Reed to me. You know, I love the lyrics, you know, Anchor Tattoo on her breast. One of my favorite songs, I think, on the album. I really enjoy that.
Well, that's good to hear. That's actually a bonus track on the CD versus the vinyl album. But it does have a thing about it.
It does. It's very catchy. You know, it's something you don't forget. And like I said, you know, Jetpack Nightmare, their, you know, guitar riffs and lead on that is very powerful. One of my favorites as well. You know, take a look around. You have a great female singer. The female backing voice on that one.
That's Petra Hayden and Andrea Watts.
Right. Excellent. And, you know, take a look around. You know, it's, the world is upside down. I mean, it kind of fits, doesn't it?
Yeah, a lot of this stuff works really well for the current time we're going through.
Exactly. Climate change kind of, you know, you kind of refer to a little bit like Ramones, even though Iggy Pop was definitely way before, the Stooges were way before the Ramones. But it kind of reminded me of a song they would do. You know, Small Change, another one, Liar, cool track, No Dreams. Very, very cool album. Now, the songwriting, this was that between both of you, or how did that work out?
Yeah, I think that as it ended up, if you include the bonus track, I think I had 6 songs on there, and Dennis had 5, but
right.
5 and 5 on the vinyl. And I think it's well balanced. You know, the type of song that Dennis writes versus the type of song I write, they blend well with each other, so that they, you know, the album is interesting all the way through.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. It's a very interesting album. Keeps your attention for sure. I mean, it's I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was an excellent album. And you guys teamed up before on an EP. You did I Need Somebody, which also, you know, excellent song.
Yeah, that was the first time we tried to do anything together. We just did a few songs that I had already written with Iggy.
Right.
And we just redid them acoustically. But that was a fun record to do, too.
Do you think you're going to continue working with Dennis after the album?
Well, I don't know. We'll continue to be friends for sure. And once we got to know each other, and he actually lives full time now in Hawaii.
Oh, wow.
And I'm there frequently, and so we're on the same island. So we got to be pretty good friends over the years. And I don't know what we'll do next. You know, I haven't got that far yet. Glad to hear you like it.
I love the album, and I also dug deep into your the Careless Hearts.
The Pink Hearts.
The Pink Hearts, right?
Oh,
right.
Oh, you mean Careless? There's also Careless Hearts too.
Right.
That was the very beginning when I was just coming back into music. I needed to have band, you know, to kind of play with to get the hang of live shows because I hadn't played one in so long. So that band offered me, you know, to their services to be my band. That was the Careless Hearts. And then, of course, the one you're referring to, the last full album was the Pink Hearts. And that was a little couple years ago.
The Pink Hearts is also, you know, I listened to Behind the Shade, which, very cool album as well. I was really impressed by that as well. And you got some great players. You got Petra Hayden, great vocalist. Where did you meet those guys from with that band?
Well, the singer, Frank Meyer, is somebody that I had used when I did a record called Relit, which was essentially a record of all the songs that I had written with Iggy towards the end of the band, and that we had played them all live, and they were all bootlegged like crazy, but we had never made the record because CBS wouldn't renew our contract. So I decided, okay, well, I'm gonna do all those songs right, because I hated the way the bootlegs sounded, and I'll do them with different vocalists on every song. And so that's what I did. Relict is essentially that, and it turned out great. And when we played Relict live, I needed a singer for a particular song. I didn't get all of the 13 singers to show up for the live gig. And Frank sang, and he was fantastic. He reminded me, actually, he was very influenced by Terry Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, he somebody I remembered, and I used him on other things going forward. And also, Petra Hayden was the first time I had used her, was on that album as well. And then of course, the drummer I use now, Michael Urbano, was on Relict as well. And so, you know, you pick up these people as you go along, and I always keep the good ones if I can.
Yeah, this album should have done a lot more than it probably had. You know, I would have promoted the hell out of it. I'm still going to promote it a lot because it's an excellent album. You know, it comes out firing with right on the strip. You know, very powerful tune. I like Judith Christ. Is that how you, not Christ, right? Christ?
Christ, yeah.
Yeah, and another great tune.
There's a lot of good ones on there.
And yeah.
You know, that's what happens when you self-release stuff.
Right.
It's just not the same kind of promotion that a label will do, even a small label, you know. So, that's the fate of that kind of approach.
I like Frank's voice on You Send Me Down. He sounded, I just had Jimmy Hall on the show not long ago from Wet Willie. He reminded me of Jimmy Hall a little bit on that song.
Huh.
And early Van Morrison, maybe, you know?
Uh-huh.
His voice.
Yeah.
Very, very cool record, man. Very cool. It's and again, it's called Behind the Shade. It's all over YouTube. I mean, anybody can, you know, check it out. Got to talk a little bit about Iggy and the Stooges, of course. How come Iggy never wears a shirt?
I can't really tell you that. I mean, he started all of that long before I was in the band. And, you know, it's his thing. I guess it worked for him. I mean, I think it's a little tough to look at. You know, he's on the other hand, you know, he's been a very fortunate guy throughout his career. His physique has been, you know, has held up pretty well.
Right.
But it's just, you know, nobody can escape, you know, what happens to your skin and, you know, your veins and everything else. So, you know, it's his thing, but it's sort of wearing, I think, now.
Yeah, when you guys are together now, it's like he's still after that kind of old-fashioned, punkish type look. and the other guys are starting to look like bankers. Because, you know, you got that background now. You were in corporate America all these years, and it kind of shows. Because I was in corporate America for, like, you know, 15 years. I was in the banking industry, and so I know how it is. But you start to, you know, looking like them.
Well, you know, it's just that I have to look the way I look. I mean, the thing is, I don't really have, I have a different context in my life, and so I have to be who I am. But I think Iggy is, you know, he has to be like, he's never been anything else, you know, so
right.
He has to be that.
Exactly.
And, it was kind of a unique, you know, mix of people, but, I think it sounded good, though.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, it's incredible, you know, I love it that you guys, ended up in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know, because there's so many bands that should be there that aren't there, and who knows if it's political and just a bunch of guys picking their favorite bands and whatever, but I'm so glad you guys ended up there because you deserve it.
Yeah. Well, of course it is political, but
yeah.
The thing was, you know, the Stooges got turned down 7 times,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
And so it was like, you know, we were getting to the point of where we were going to sort of say, you know, declare victory that we were too good to be in the Hall of Fame, you know, and sure enough, then we got in.
Amazing. Well, you know, Raw Power was one of my favorite albums, and, you know, it's one of the most iconic, you know, covers, front covers on an album, you know, amongst all these albums. And you were very fortunate to be on that album, which is excellent.
Well, not only that, but it was my first album, so
yeah.
I was really fortunate that that worked out so well.
Exactly. It was a good time, about 1973, I guess. What happened between the David Bowie thing? There was some tension there, right?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think that you can work with David Bowie or Iggy
mm-hmm.
without, you know, creating some tension somewhere along the line.
Uh-huh.
But I think in terms of the Raw Power itself, you know, it's a mixed bag. You know, Raw Power had a lot of technical flaws, and in the end, it was too much of a mix for Iggy to handle. That was my first album, so I didn't have
right.
any experience. I wasn't going to try to do that. But so they brought David Bowie in to do the mix, and of course, you know, he at that point, especially, he was, you know, very arty type guy, and he, you know, he put his fingerprints on it,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it was a very strange mix. Now, granted, he didn't have a lot to work with. I mean, there was a lot of leakage in the drum tracks and the bass tracks and so forth, and so he had to really bring those down, and people complain about that, but of course it made me sound great, you know, because
yeah.
you could hear there's just guitar and vocals, which is kind of what Jack White has made a career out of doing, but nonetheless, you know, so there's been a lot of controversy about that mix, and
yep.
I frankly think it's the right one because it's the historical mix, but Iggy did another mix, and, you know, different people like different things. That's not my favorite mix, but anyway, and then over time, you know, Iggy saw David Bowie as kind of his meal ticket, you know, the gravy train, and so he went over to Europe with him,
mm-hmm.
and they toured together then after a while and made some albums together and so forth, and I think that, you know, that ran its course, and they sort of didn't really, they were kind of, there was, as you say, some tension there. But I think then later they sort of mended fences and stuff, and now of course they, you know, is very complimentary towards Bowie.
Right. So you didn't really like the mix too much, huh?
You mean Iggy's mix or Bowie's mix?
Bowie's mix.
No, at first, we all hated it.
Right.
But then I got accustomed to it, and I think since it's actually the historical mix.
Right.
I think it's actually, you like it or not, that's the one, mm-hmm. right? And so you really, there's not much else you can say about it. A lot of people, there's controversy to this day about it,
Yeah.
But it is what it is, and I think it made the album sound different from anything ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it still is different. And I think what it really shows is that no matter how you try to screw up an album, if the songs are good, it's going to sound good.
Right. You're a producer. What makes a great producer, in your opinion?
Oh, boy. That's a complicated question, but I think probably the most important things are to know when to take a project and when to turn one down,
mm-hmm.
Because every producer cannot produce every act.
Right.
And you need to only pick the things I think that you really want to work on, because it's a lot of work for one thing.
Sure.
And I tend to only do stuff that I'm involved in personally, so I know that, early on, I did do New Values for Iggy, mm-hmm. which came out great, but then I also was asked to do Soldier, which I started doing, but I just hated so many things about it that I ended up not being the guy to finish the project.
Right.
And so I learned in that process that, just don't take every one, because if it's not right, it's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think that's kind of key. And then you need to understand the music and understand, where you fit in the whole picture.
Are you involved with the engineering process as well?
No. I know enough about it to, uh-huh. I'll say things, but I'm not actually engineering these records anymore. There's so many guys that are better than me. So I try to leave it to the people who really know what they're doing to do that stuff. And I'll put in my 2 cents worth here and there, and I do have an impact on things, but I, for the most part, don't try to influence things to the point where the good things that the engineer can bring are left out.
Right, right. Hey, some of those boards are massive, man. I don't know how they keep track.
On the other hand, if you're doing it right, you don't need all that complexity.
True.
I mean, that is true. Not in the kind of music that I make anyway.
Yeah.
Some of the instrumental heavy stuff that people make is a whole different bag, but I don't do that anyway.
Yeah. Or the complicated stuff, intricate stuff like progressive rock and symphonic rock, that's got to be tough, on a board. Johnny Marr, I guess from the Smiths, and he was in Modest
yeah.
Mouth. He's got, I love this quote he says about you. He says he lauded Williamson's ability. I'm his biggest fan. He has the technical ability of Jimmy Page without being as studious, and the swagger of Keith Richards without being sloppy. He's both demonic and intellectual, almost how you would imagine Darth Vader to sound if he was in a band. Does that describe you?
Well, I don't know, but I appreciate it. Johnny's a nice guy. He really is, and he's a hell of a good guitar player too. A different style than me, but he's a good guy.
Yeah. Now you went away for the music industry probably about 30 years or so before you came back when you were.
Yeah, that's probably about right.
That's incredible. That's a long time, man.
It is, and it's what's even more astonishing is that when I left the music business, nobody liked us.
Oh.
And we played very small shows.
Right.
shows like the Whiskey A Go Go and stuff. And so when I came back to play my first show, it was like 30,000 people, 40,000, I think, maybe.
Exactly.
And I was like, it was just a completely different world. So, yeah, I mean, I was away a long time, and coming back, I was just like, you know, Rip Van Winkle, you know? It's things, how could things have happened like this? But it was true.
One thing, Iggy got real popular on, you know, like commercial radio when he came out with Real Wild Child, Wild One. That was a big hit. You know, it was on Crocodile Dundee 2, Adventures in Babysitting, Problem Child. So that was huge for Iggy, you know, to cross lines like that and get into commercial, you know?
Yeah. Well, and oddly enough, even the stuff from Raw Power was getting into commercials into movies.
Yeah.
So it was pretty amazing, you know, you write something, you know, 40, 50 years ago, and it becomes current, you know, that's very strange.
Exactly. Well, you know, time changes things, I guess, you know. You were outside in France. I saw a video of you by yourself on the street doing some Stooges music. You know what I'm talking about? How did that work out?
It was not actually real busking, but I was doing it, you know, kind of an imitation busking. And I had a lot of fun doing that. It was actually, it's illegal in Paris to do that without, if you don't have a permit.
Uh-huh.
But I did it for you know, very briefly to just to have the video, you know, and it was fun. Nobody gave me any money, though.
Did they know who you were?
I don't know. You know, hard to say. But anyway, that was fun.
Yeah, that was pretty cool, you know, to see you out there. They didn't show the crowd or anything. They just showed you doing, you know, some great music, which was really cool.
There wasn't any crowd. There was people walking by and stuff and trying not to pay attention to me.
Yeah, you were doing Raw Power, right?
Yeah.
And that was in Paris. I think it was in Paris.
Yeah, it was in Paris, yeah.
Yeah, pretty cool. Here's a question I ask everybody, and it's a very interesting response I get from a lot of people. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie, to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Oh boy, that covers a lot of ground.
I know, everybody says that.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, you know, if I was going to just have a kind of person that I've always looked up to, and I met him before, you know, I'd say I'd like to play with Jeff Beck.
Oh yeah.
You know, I think he's an amazing player and a nice guy too.
Right.
And so that might be interesting. You know, beyond that, I kind of, the trouble with me, my style is that I don't leave a lot of air for people. So to play with me is a little more challenging than it might seem because I'm taking up all the air.
You know? It's true.
That makes it kind of rough. So I'd say that's probably, I think Jeff Beck can pull it off, but because he does a lot of, you know, wild stuff he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's a great musician, you know, with a great past. It's funny that, you know, he was fired from the Yardbirds.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah,
he's got his own, you know, his own way of doing things.
Yes, he does. I was fortunate to have John McLaughlin on recently. And that's another guy I admire, where all the things that he does. He does everything his way, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah. He you know, he's another innovator, I guess, of the music and fusion and all that stuff. So, you know, love interviewing guys like it, especially also like you. You know, great guitar player, you know, a cross between a little bit of punk, more MC5 type, you know, rock and hard rock stuff. But very unique. You guys were very, very unique, you know, and you never got bored of Stooges music, that's for sure.
Yeah, that I think that came from, well, the people, of course, but the band itself was also really, especially at first, was kind of its own self-contained world.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't talk. I mean, we had our own language. It was like a little gang, you know. We didn't really try to get influenced by the outside. We influenced ourselves internally, and that's part of the big difference with the Stooges. But also, in my particular style, I also was self-taught, and I had come up playing, writing my own songs, and playing a certain sort of emotive, you know, type sound, which is really still what I do to this day. I kind of play this kind of hard, emotive sound. It's built into my style, so I can't really do anything else. So I'm happy that you like what I do.
I do like it. Yeah, I love it. I love the new album and everything else you've done on the solo albums as well. How many guitars do you have? Are you one of those guys that collects a lot of guitars?
I have too many, for sure. and I, you know, the odd thing is I really only record with essentially one guitar, which is a Les Paul Custom.
Yeah.
And I do, when it comes to acoustics, I do also like to play a Martin D28.
Uh-huh.
And those are my primary guitars, my go-to guitars. And I fiddle around, you know, like, I guess I played one, you know, Tele on, you know, the Pink Hearts thing, but I don't really record them and play them that much. And so, why I ever got them, I have no idea. It's kind of a disease guitar players get. But I, you know, that's really what I only play is those two guitars.
That's funny. I play a little guitar. I've always played Tellys. I've always been a Fender guy, and I've never picked up a Gibson. What do you think is the main difference between the Telly and the Gibsons?
Oh, kind of everything.
Yeah.
the old standard Telly is not, you know, is the Fender Telly style pickup, the single coil type pickups,
right.
and the Gibson pickups are typically humbuckers, and so it's just a completely different sound. The Gibsons are, the Les Pauls are very heavy guitars,
mm-hmm.
so they're a big slab of wood, and so you're going to get a lot more sustain out of them. And the Tellys are lighter, and they tend to be, you know, they tend to kind of, where they started was guys that were doing chicken picking, you know, kind of, you know, country guys.
Yep.
And they're nice to play. And I've owned them over the years, but, I just like that big, you know, that big sound, with the sustain. So it just works really well for me, especially through a Fox AC30. That's the sound.
Mm-hmm. What about the, you know, as far as playing lead, which one feels better as far as playing lead to you?
The same thing. It's Les Paul.
Les Paul.
I get much more sustain out of the Les Paul than I do out of the Tele. It's more, you know, it's kind of more, I don't know, for a different type of style than I have. But it's a good guitar. I mean, like a lot of guys like Jeff Beck have used them, you know, to great effect.
Yeah, I had a 73 Tele. I had a Gibson Flying V. I did have a Gibson. I had the Flying V. But, you know, that's a different guitar altogether.
Yeah, well, that's a cool guitar.
Yeah.
But it's hard to play. Usually the action is really bad.
It is hard to play. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I always love the way they look.
Yeah, it is cool. Very, very cool. James, you got anything else for me that you want to promote? We got the new album coming out. It's September 18th. Now, you can pre-order that now, correct?
Yes.
And
yep, you can.
Where should they go? Should they go on Cleopatra Records? Should they go on your website?
Well, you can do Cleopatra or do Amazon, depending on where you live. You
okay.
know, the shipping might be better. And, you know, there'll be lots of other distribution that's done on it as it gets a little closer to release.
Well, it's a great album. I gave it 5 stars. Everyone's going to love it. You guys mesh very, very well together. You know, what else can I say more about the album? I'm going to promote the hell out of it for you.
Well, Ray, thank you very much. I appreciate that you know, like it that much, and I appreciate your helping to, you know, get the word out on it.
Of course, man. We got to keep rock and roll going, you know, keep it alive. You know, it can never die. Never die. And what about are you guys going to go on the road when all this crap is over, or what? What do you think?
Well, you know, hard to say, really.
Yeah.
It's kind of moot point right now. But, you know, my touring days are pretty much done with.
Right.
I've done a lot of it now, and I hadn't intended to, but, you know, I'd never say never.
Right.
You know, for sure, I might do a show, the odd show here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, Dennis still tours, and so it's quite possible he might, you know, do some of this album himself.
Yeah, exactly.
He plays guitar and sings, and
yeah.
So there's no reason for him not to.
Right. What about Iggy still touring as well?
Well, not these days, but
of course,
yeah, he has been doing a little bit, you know. I think, you know, especially for what he does, it's rough, you know. I mean, it's really, really rough, and he's had to pay dearly for how physical he's been over the years.
I can imagine.
I don't know how long he can do it. I really think that, I mean, I wouldn't do it, let's put it that way. You can't get me to, you know, stage dive, you know, in my mid-70s, right? You know, that's kind of crazy if you ask me, but, you know, I don't know, what else can Iggy do is the problem.
Not much more. He's done it all.
That's what he does, right?
He's done it all. It's funny how many rock stars have gotten hip replacements, you know, and knee replacements.
Nothing.
Yeah, that's crazy. I was playing with my grandkids, and I tripped over one of those gates, you know, and
yeah.
It broke my shoulder and separated it, and I had to have surgery, and, you know, I can't even get out of the house without hurting myself.
All right, Ray, well, I'm going to let you go, but
all right, man.
Thanks again for all of this. And,
sure.
Good talking to you.
Good talking to you too, James. Take care, and take care of the family and everybody.
You too.
All right, man. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Purchased a new album by the Stooges' James Williamson and Radio Birdman's Dennis Tech, entitled 2 to 1. It's coming soon on Cleopatra Records. The official release date is September 18th, which you can go ahead and start pre-ordering now at Cleopatra Records, or you can go to Amazon.com. For more information about James Williamson, visit www.straightjameswilliamson.com. That's his official website. He's on Twitter, www.twitter.com/straightjamesw. Go to Iggy Pop's website at www.iggypop.com. Iggy's on Facebook as well, www.facebook.com/iggypop. Dennis Tech's official website, www.dennistech.com. That's DENIZTEK. Radio Birdman's official website, www.radiobirdman.com. And also Cleopatra Records, www.cleopatrarecords.com. Very special thanks to the great Billy James of Glass Onion PR for arranging this interview with James Williamson and the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, please contact me at interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. And please, please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews right into your inbox. It's real news, people. And, of course, my new book is finally out, entitled The Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1. Chronicles, truths, confessions, and wisdom from the music legends that set us all free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook, and that's the collector's edition hardcover, beautiful hardcover, by the way. And you can get those at bookbaby.com. There's a special deal at bookbaby.com for both the hardcover and ebook together. And the book features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends the world will ever know. Stay safe, everybody. Be happy. Have a great week. Peace and love. Bye-bye now.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.